Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Rachel Fisk joining us. Rachel is a yoga teacher with 25 years of experience. In addition to teaching yoga, she is a tantric sex coach. I didn't know that tantric sex was coachable, but I learned so much today, and I know you will too. She talks about how you can apply this to your relationship, either to heal a current relationship or to take your relationship to a whole new spiritual and healing level. Not only that, she really dives into how this philosophy, this school of thought that dates back 4,000 years, is really mirroring what current modern scientific data suggests about relationships and what Laura Berman and other people who I've talked to have been on the show also say in today's society. Stay tuned for an incredible episode packed with tons of information. I learned a ton and I know you're going to love it. If you like what you hear, as always, please hop over to iTunes, hit subscribe, leave a review, and thanks so much for listening. Hi, today I am here with Rachel Fisk. She is a yoga teacher, and she's going to talk to us about yoga and tantric sex and many other things. Hey, Rachel, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Laura. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so excited for you to join this podcast because I think your life and what you're working on has so much connection to the podcast topic. So I'm just going to dive in if that's okay with you.
Totally.
I think many people listening have lots of preconceived notions about tantric sex, what it is, what it means. But truthfully, I think it's really a superficial understanding. So I was wondering if you could start the show by jumping in and just explaining what does tantric sex, you know, what does it mean? What's the history, a little background? Give us a little lay of the land, if you will.
All right. Yes, I agree that this topic fits in really well with your podcast, especially because I feel like authenticity is really emerging on the planet as like this is a topic now. So yay for you. And I feel like it's especially emerging in regard to human sexuality. So it makes total sense to be talking about Tantra.
So when you say that, like human sexuality, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, 50 years ago, nobody, you know, there was just a very mainstream view of sex and sexuality was very mainstreamed, heteronormative, the Dick Van Dyke show, two people sleeping in twin beds. The audience probably doesn't know what that show is, but
I remember those.
And now I think so many more things are acceptable and accepted. Let's do the Tantra piece first, then I would love to talk about sort of like the history of sexuality and how it's evolved.
Perfect.
So I am all about personal transformation. So Tantra is a personal transformation path. Tantra is where yoga was like 20, 25 years ago. So It was really rare to see people walking down the street with a yoga mat 25 years ago. The first yoga class I ever went to, the teacher put us on carpet squares. There weren't yoga mats. You couldn't buy them. And you could mention at a, you know, dinner party, I do yoga, and everybody would turn and look and be like, what's yoga? What do you guys do in there?
Yeah.
You know, what is it? So that is where Tantra, I think, is now. So
yeah, I'm with you because that's kind of where I'm – I hate to admit it, but I am a little that person sort of saying, what is this?
And that is totally normal and perfect. So one way to look at it is – so Tantra has a lot of different definitions, just like you can go to one yoga class and walk out and go, oh, that's what yoga was, and then go to another one and go, well, how could they both be yoga?
Yeah.
The first class wasn't at all like the second class. And in truth, those two yoga teachers could have actually had the same teacher teach them in their teacher training.
Yeah.
So this is a great way to look at Tantra. If you think of like an imaginary continuum, like a line, then on the far, far right, there's a philosophy called Tantra that has nothing whatsoever to do with sexuality. And then on the far, far left, there's the word Tantra, and also some people call it Neo-Tantra, that is associated with concepts like polygamy, polyamory, group sex, getting naked with complete strangers, So then somewhere in the middle of that continuum, there is the Tantra that I know and love and teach. So to me, it's a non-dual spiritual path that includes and honors sexual energy. So it's not about sex, but it's not about sex. To me, it's a brilliant blend of these ancient yogic techniques that just awaken the flow of life in us.
And so if I were coming to you, because you're a Tantra yoga coach, what would that look like? So if philosophy is a piece of it, and on the far other extreme, you have the part that I think most of us equate with it, where there's the crazy sexual side, what does it mean to have a couple come to you and work with you? What would that process look like?
Well, since it's a personal growth path, you know, the first thing I say to couples who come to me is, there is no more pleasant personal growth path in the world than this one. Wouldn't you rather do your personal growth in a state of sexual ecstasy than through crying and therapy? So no offense to therapists. therapists are welcome to come do Tantra with me. So I'm sort of kidding. You know, both are their own path. But the minute I found out that Tantra is a personal growth path, I was sort of in the middle of my first Tantra workshop and realized, oh, that's what's going on here. This is a personal growth path. How can it get any better than this?
And what does that look like in real life? Like what kinds of things do you do?
Well, it really depends on the couple. So I may get a couple who's been together 25 or 30 years and they just want to rekindle that spark that they first had when they met. Or I might have a couple come to me and one of them maybe has abuse issues in their past or some other trauma that they can't really get through. So we'll see some yoga. You will see some breathing. When I work with individuals, each appointment is so unique that I might not give you the same, you know, techniques and things to do that I would give someone else. Often I send people home with homework, which I call home play, because I really want them to play with it and have fun with it. So, I mean, it sounds like you're wanting the really pragmatic answer. So I'm going to give you the really pragmatic answer. So here is one pragmatic answer for instance, couples who may be having an issue with who's going to initiate sex.
Okay.
So, you know, one person maybe initiates all the time and they start feeling the burden of that. Okay. So what I would say to that couple is, here's one solution we can try. Let's get a piece of paper and cut it into 30 squares. On the back of 15, let's write yes. On the back of 15, let's write no. Let's take all the yeses, and on the yeses, on the back of that, let's write John runs his fingers through Marsha's hair. On the back of another yes, let's write, Marsha comes up behind John and grabs his genitals from behind. Okay, I'm just making these up.
Okay.
But there will be 15 yeses and that they all agree to. So I'm not writing down something that they in advance say, I'm unwilling to do this.
Right.
Then okay. I say, we'll fold all these squares up. We're going to put them in a bowl next to your bed. You are going to go home and every night you're going to pick one. If you pick one that says no, you don't have to have sex that night. You can if you want, but it's off the plate for either of you. If you pick one that says yes, on the back of it, it says who's initiating.
Got it.
That's it. So is that Tantra or is that me and my interpretation of Tantra? Well, that is the thing about Tantra and yoga. You and I could go to the same yoga teacher training and you're going to walk out and say things in your way and I'm going to walk out and say things in my way. So to me, what I'm doing here is taking the issue off the table. So now you have no issue. Now you can just engage in sex. So then for this couple, once they are engaging in sex, I will say, when you both are aroused, after we get this issue off the table, all right, so pretending that they're okay now with who's going to initiate, then I'll say, now here are some things that you can do while you are both aroused at about a 7 or an 8. Here are some breaths you can do. Here are some things you could say. And I will give them very specific ways of moving their sexual energy through their own body and then sharing it with each other.
I see.
So by sexual energy, I mean not necessarily the friction sex,
yep,
but the energy part. So for people who think that is like too mystical, I would really direct those people to your interview with Dr. Laura Berman, because that really covers it. And because she has a doctor before her name, and she breaks it down really well, and it's really scientific, and she's a doctor, it makes a really nice background for this conversation, because my premise is that there is energy.
Okay.
I'm not an expert in explaining why there's energy, but I love talking about quantum physics.
And so it's really like, a lot of us think of it as sort of the technical side of sex and all the different positions, but in fact, this is really around emotional healing and shifting energy and allowing people the space to express themselves, would you say?
I would say exactly.
Yeah. And would you say that your advice to your couples comes from the philosophical, when you talk about the philosophy on one side, your philosophical understanding of this topic and how it might relate to that couple?
Yes. So the philosophical understanding to me is Tantra is a non-dual philosophic or spiritual path. And so non-dual means God or the divine is not outside us. That's dual. That's there's God over there and there's me on earth. And I grew up Catholic, so I really get that duality part. The non-dual is that your partner is divine consciousness embodied.
I see.
Some couples love that part, and some that might not be in their language, so it will just be in the background, and it's not that I'm going to make them see each other as divine. But I think that is just one step beyond what Dr. Laura Berman talks about in her podcast, which is, you know, everything this person does that triggers you is actually a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, if I understand that my partner is divine, literally divine consciousness flowing through this person, if I'm irritated by them, it's really about me. It can't be about them because they're divine.
Right.
What is it bringing up in me that I need to heal? So that's how Tantra is a healing path.
It's so interesting how Laura Berman is bringing this to light from modern day science. And this is, I mean, how long has this been around?
You know, 4,000-ish years.
Yeah. And it's pointing to the same kind
right,
of answers.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love it too.
I love the unseen, you know, I love the invisible, the mystic stuff. But what I'm really loving most about living in 2016 is that all of this supposedly mystic stuff is being proven to be real. So in particle physics, one physical particle bumping up against another, everything has to be able to be observed by our five senses in order to be real. And then there's that leap, I guess, because our microscopes are so much more powerful now that when they look closer and closer and closer and closer at a particle, what they see is literally nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there's nothing there. It's mm-hmm. invisible. So to me, that's what energy is.
Interesting.
That's what we're made of. We look solid, but we're made of energy.
Yeah. And so learning how to think about the energy, and Laura talks about it in terms of frequency, but again, it's a 4,000-year-old practice.
Right.
Of how to think about your own energy and how you bring that to the people in your life. And so I'm imagining your coaching practice looks a lot like people come to you, you mentioned, who initiates, so they have some kind of very tactical, practical thing that's on their mind. But in fact, does it always end up in this emotional healing, energetic space?
Not necessarily. If that's why they are coming to me for some kind of healing, that's where it will end up. But I have had people have given other couples a gift certificate. And for instance, there was a couple who received one as a wedding gift. And so they were at the beginning of their sex life. And so to me, that couple, to me, that was all about just like, how can we start you off on a very, I want to say, authentic sexual path?
Well, so since you brought it up again, let's jump into it. What do you mean by authentic sexual path? What is an authentic sex life look like?
Well, I would say that sexuality, that it's not dictated by shame and darkness and ignorance and lack of communication. So we're all really unique sexual beings. This is something really interesting that I think I just heard this week. There's a study in which 57% of the people studied said that they were kinky. So
really?
50%, 57% is a majority of people, you know?
That's amazing.
That's amazing. So I think, as I said, in the 1950s, oral sex was a major kink. It was just like something that wasn't done. So right now we're at this place where we could stop trying to fit everyone into some heteronormative norm sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't it be like what we have an appetite for dinner?
I see. So
and
authentic.
Why can't it be okay to be like, well, gluten-free? Some people are gluten-free. Some people are vegetarian. Some people are like same-sex partners. Some people like to be tied up when they're having sex. Why fit everybody into some sort of norm? Sex is really changing. People are trying more things than they tried 50 years ago. There aren't as many taboos, and it's just like not all missionary all the time. And also there's so many new terms like demisexual and sapiosexual. I think part of all of these new terms are because of internet dating, and we need to find a way to label ourselves because that's just really helpful.
Mm-hmm. So it must be fascinating for you to have been in this space for all these years and watch it shift so much.
It has been fascinating.
How would a couple show up to you 10 years ago versus today? I mean, there must have been, with the anxiety levels, must have been crazy back then, no? Or what have you seen really change?
It's a good question. I would say, by and large, it is not the couples so much that have changed. I think I am kind of more in the newer generation in terms of all of these new labels and this new permission. And I think for the most part, most of the couples that I see are a little older
mm-hmm.
and haven't gotten the permission yet. So I don't feel like the couples have changed so much in the last 10 years. And it also might be that this is who I attract.
Yeah.
Right? I attract baby boomers, I'll just say. But I have so much more information and permission that I can give people to really explore who they are sexually, It's not something that's taught. Girls aren't even taught in sex ed that sex is supposed to feel good. They don't even really know.
Yeah. In this day, you're saying even.
Yeah, still. And so, you know, to get someone who took sex ed when I took it a million years ago, to be given the permission to explore her own body is huge. And to give couples the permission to explore different positions is huge. And to give them permission, it's like almost the society has never given us this permission. And to give them permission, like, this is your home play. This is what you're going to do. You are going to go stimulate your partner to an 8, and then she is going to breathe that energy through her body and feel what it feels like to breathe it into her fingertips. That's huge, rather than having them just do this little genital orgasm that they've typically been doing, you know, for the last 30 years.
Fascinating. And for somebody out there that is intrigued in a relationship that's in a crisis around the sex life, and they don't have the opportunity to work with you, but they're interested in trying, you know, something around this subject, is this really unique to each couple? Is there any advice you can offer that's a little more global for somebody who's starting off?
I can so totally give advice sight unseen to people who are listening. I mean, one thing I think is fun, like this is my idea of fun. One fun thing that you can do is, and you don't even really need your partner's permission, and you don't necessarily need a partner, but let's just pretend it's a couple. And then one of the individuals in the couple would like to try something new, is to explore your own comfort zone between giving and receiving. a lot of us, it's a lot easier for us to give and harder to receive. And it always surprises me within a couple. It's sometimes not the person that seems to be the more giving who actually is. But so just knowing what your comfort zone is with the giving and receiving, here's what I would recommend during sex. And I would call this tantra, would be if you're normally a receiver, give and notice that new territory and vice versa. But then experience the way that, like, when you're giving, you're also receiving, and you can play with that.
What
when
do you mean?
So you're also giving. All right. So let's just use our words. So let's say that I am giving oral sex to my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can play with that in my head and I'm like doing something to him or her. But what if I dial back from that doing and I imagine they are giving me a gift of themselves? Through these amazing genitals, I am able to experience who they are at this really, really private level. So yes, I am doing something to them that arouses them, but at the same time in my mind, I'm playing with it as they are delivering something to me, male sexual energy or female sexual energy, and I'm soaking that up. So I'm giving and receiving at the same time. Same thing if they are doing something stimulating to me. I can be lying there and receiving, which is sometimes hard for people. And at the same time, I can imagine I am giving. I'm giving my heart. I'm giving my permission. And so when you start to blur those lines between giving and receiving sexually, there's a deeper union. So it's not just like you're doing your partner.
That's so interesting. I mean, you know, outside of sex, one does think of the world in those gross terms. You're either doing a favor for somebody or they're doing one for you, right? And I love the idea of blurring the lines anywhere in your life.
Yeah. And then so for people who are like, oh my God, that sounds way too edgy. I could never do that. I would say, okay, so do you like chocolate? Do you like whipped cream? Do you like peanut butter? Do you like just do this feeding them off your finger?
Same idea.
Yes. So you don't have to be naked. You don't have to have your legs open. You could certainly be in bed, but you know, maybe you have some really yummy maple syrup or something. Feed your partner from your finger. And you are doing, you're giving, but at the same time, you're receiving.
Yeah. And
so that's a good way to fully clothed, you know, operate in with this little game, fully clothed.
I love it. And I think, you know, if that's even uncomfortable, you could even start in a non-sexual place, right? I mean, just learning how to give or receive properly, I think, is something we all really struggle with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. I have learned so much about the subject that I have to say, I was the person who was new to yoga 25 years ago. And when you're also not just working with private practices, but you're also doing monthly groups. You have a monthly Tantra 101. What is that?
What indeed? It's really hard to have an elevator speech about it. I send out feedback sheets to people after their experience. And one woman called me and she goes, "Why, I have such a hard time putting into words. It is really like going to like weird church." And she goes, "So it's like reverent and you walk out feeling like, wow, this is the way I would want to walk out after church." But we were exploring our sexuality. And really what we're doing is exploring our heart, sex, consciousness. But I love creating group experiences.
Yeah.
So I call my events Tantra 101, but it's not like they are sitting there taking notes and I am expounding upon my beliefs about Tantra. It's an experiential evening. So we're trained, I guess, we're trained by the culture to interact in certain ways at, like, we'll call a certain frequency or a certain level. And that's just supported everywhere. You say the appropriate things to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we're really only getting a small sliver of what life is. And so my workshops are sort of a way to change the channel, even just for 2 hours on a Saturday night, and to tune in to something else. And really, my intention for people is that they walk out feeling alive again. So with alcohol, you can alter your consciousness, but I think you sort of sink beneath thought. Mm-hmm. You lessen mm-hmm. your inhibitions, but you've sunk beneath thought. You kind of, most of us anyway, kind of get dumber and make bad choices typically. But Tantra and getting together and doing some of these exercises in a group is a way of rising above thought and kind of like looking down at ourselves from a higher perspective and realizing that we're not our thoughts. We're sort of like seeing those everyday inhibitions and going, bye-bye, I don't need you for these next 2 hours. And then being able to look out at others who are also participating and realizing that they are pure awareness, rather than looking at them and wondering like what socioeconomic level did they come from? Where did they grow up? What did they do for a living? How many kids do they have? You're really just going like, all of these people just like me are just divine embodiments.
Yeah, we're all having the same experience. We just don't really believe that to be true. And by the way, I'm stealing the alcohol we sink beneath thoughts. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I heard that like 10 years ago from Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, so really?
I believe that it's really his.
Yes. He's so quotable.
Yeah. I think it stuck with me because it was like, yeah, that totally makes sense. And what we want to do is rise above thoughts and rather than just living in our thoughts. So you can walk out after a Tantra 101 evening and feel like you've changed your consciousness in a way. You've expanded your awareness. And that is what I call enlightened sexuality. Just shining the light on sexuality and realizing that sexuality can be held up into the light without having to get naked. You know, it's literally what makes babies. So how can it be inherently nasty or dirty or shameful?
I love it. That's such a great thing to offer people and to create a space where people are able to rise up above thoughts. I can't imagine what that takes from your experience base to make that happen, but what a gift. So, Rachel, I want to ask you questions I ask a lot of our guests. We covered it a little around sex and sexual healing, but what does an authentic life then mean to you?
Wow. Well, you know, to me, it really means not teaching something that I haven't learned and embodied myself, not teaching people or telling people to do things that I can't do or somehow I can't incorporate into my existence. Mm-hmm. Like I can't tell someone to meditate an hour a day if I don't meditate an hour a day. Mm. It also, like authenticity to me is really about acting and speaking from the core of my existence rather than from a fear of being judged or a desire to make an impression on someone.
Yeah.
It also means that like how I teach my own kid has to be aligned with who I am and not with some kind of fake morality or fake normality or something that I want her to learn.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I do think none of my guests have brought that up yet, but I do as a parent believe a big piece of authenticity is to also parent from an authentic place. We often have our kids at some standard we can't achieve, right? Yeah. And we want them off social media, and yet everybody's sitting there with their phones looking at Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, so in the spirit of authenticity, when I went to college, I majored in English. And everybody thought that was like a really frivolous major. You know, I should be majoring in something where I can make money after I graduate.
Yeah.
And frankly, it kind of was a frivolous pursuit, but I loved it. I immersed myself in English. And so now in order to be an authentic parent, I have to turn around and be okay with my daughter wanting to major in creative writing, which seems like a really frivolous major to me. I'm like, what are you going to do with creative writing?
But I was a philosophy major, so I'm right there with you. If one more person told me what am I going to do with that? Or if a tree falls in the forest, I swear. But yeah,
exactly.
I think at those ages, though, you're following the things that are meaningful to you.
Yes. And
was your path to an authentic life a straight line? How did you end up in this space? You've dedicated your life to it. Was this something that came out of a big turning point, or was it something you've been following for most of your life?
Well, I think I was taught to be inauthentic. I mean, I think that's just where my parents were, and it was kind of like you have to suck it up and please others, and that's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, you know, majoring in English was certainly a kind of a turning point, but even kind of looking before that, when we took health class, that required subject in high school, my report, like my end of the term report, was on vitamin C and can vitamin C help cure the common cold? And at that time, it was like kind of pioneering research and people weren't that into vitamins. So I did my report on that, and they, you know, take 1,000 people and who have colds and give half of them vitamin C, give the other half a placebo. And then 10% of the placebo people get well. And I looked at that and I was like, don't they care that 10% of people get well by taking a sugar pill? And that to me, like I wasn't a scientist. I didn't go investigate that, but I really became interested in why do people get well from a placebo? So finally, like 7 years ago, seriously, this is how long it took. Science is finally starting to study the placebo effect, and they find out that it's actually more like 30% effective, and that's huge. So that is kind of how I have always felt about all of life. It's like there is what is going on in the unseen realms. Mm. And so because that's been my interest and because I've pursued it, whether it was in yoga or sexuality or, you know, any kind of mysticism, in order to be authentic to myself, I really had to ignore the haters, you know, the people who would judge and say, what are you doing? Why do you believe in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in hindsight, also, interestingly, when I really go back, it's not like I ever planned to be a tantra teacher or explore some kind of form of authentic sexuality. But when I was like 9 years old, I used to read a column in my mom's Ladies' Home Journal. It was like this monthly column in a magazine called Can This Marriage Be Saved? I was 9, 10, 11, 12. I read that my whole childhood.
That's hilarious.
Incidentally, they always were saved. So that was interesting to me. Like they never said like, and then we told these people to get a divorce. But then also like interesting was that at the same age, like 9 and 10 years old, I would stay overnight at my mom's sister's house. My Aunt Joan, I would stay in the guest room, and she happened to have this huge bookshelf all about sexuality. So everything from Masters and Johnson to the Height Report to the story of, oh, some light erotica. I was 9 years old and 10 years old, and I knew everything about sex. No one knew that I knew it because I didn't say, nice book. And I was also a voracious reader. That was just who I was. So it was interesting because I knew everything about sex from that bookshelf, but no one mentioned sex to me.
Right, right.
No one said a damn thing about it. It was like, wow, I know a lot about this thing that literally no one has ever mentioned. And I sort of became the person that my friends would ask about sex.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, it makes total sense that this would be my path and this would be, I have very little, if not, you know, I might have zero shame sexually on this path and can be a person who says like, I love sex and I love yoga and tantra is yoga and sex put together. But I don't know that there was necessarily a turning point. It is almost like these seeds were planted at a really young age and they just sort of matured as I matured. And now I can look back and go, oh, everything makes total sense. Now I have a job where the small talk is, hi, so tell me about your sex life. You know, and I teach people how to love their sex life and I teach them how to create a sex life that they love if they don't already love theirs. And I teach people how to love the one they're with, even if they kind of don't.
I read loving is an action, right? That it's not about just feeling it, but you want to act in accordance with love. So if you love someone, do something loving towards them.
Yes. And it's a decision.
It's a decision. It's a decision. That is something that I've just recently come into in the last couple of years. And it's like, nobody talks about it that way, right? You love, it's a feeling that you possess, and it just, you float away out a little magic bubble and it sits there forever, right? And that's just not true. It's not true. And that's how it starts in the mid, at the beginning, because it's this big hazy hormonal place you're in. But then it's a decision, and it's all about the actions you take.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
And so what are your daily practices and habits to, navigating an authentic life? Because, the world is stressful and things are happening all the time, and there's so much in culture that asks us to betray our authentic self. And you mentioned shame and judgment and all these different things. What do you do to protect yourself against making inauthentic decisions? What are your daily practices?
Well, I do not start my day without some yoga, without a thing that's called an Abhyanga. It is an Ayurvedic practice. It's a self-massage. So yes, I cover myself with warm sesame oil every morning. But here's why I do it is because someone wanted to learn Abhyanga. And along that philosophy that I have of I can't teach someone something that I don't know, was like, well, I am going to do this for 2 weeks until I have to teach it, because I can't just go teach it to her without having had the embodied experience of what is an Abhyanga anyway. So I did it for 2 weeks. And at the end of the 2 weeks, I was like, I am incorporating this into my morning practice. And I have done it. It's been 10 years probably. But so I do yoga, I do an Abhyanga, and I do some breath that I learned from my tantra tradition called a cobra breath. So I do a number of cobra breaths. And that is a breath that it sort of reboots, like we would reboot our computer. Sometimes you just have to turn it off and then back on again, and it works just fine. So the cobra breath is sort of a rebooting my consciousness every morning. And I don't feel like I can go out into the world and teach people to do any of this if I haven't done it myself.
Yeah.
I might tell someone to do a 5-minute meditation, because that is graspable. That's not too crazy. It's rare that I tell people that they need to do a 20-minute Abhyanga every day.
No, I think that, getting started somewhere, there's that app Headspace. I think it's amazing just to, these things are so strange the way they're presented, that you have to start meditation by going to a retreat and sitting on a mountaintop somewhere. It's just not true. Just start somewhere, do anything. I just was told recently that 10 minutes of meditation a day for 2 weeks reduces inflammation markers, that they've actually studied that.
That is amazing. And that is reason enough to do it.
Yeah.
Without everything else. And so here's what I would also say tantrically: meditate on your sexual energy. Be in a state of arousal and sit with that for 10 minutes. So if you feel your mind wander, bring it back to your sexual energy. So what is there someone please tell me some better thing to meditate on than sexual energy? Yeah. That is what tantra is.
Out there that's saying, okay, but that's the last thing I want to do is breathe. I want to that's like, how do they cultivate the impulse control?
We play with that. So if someone had that exact question, I would say then just take yourself to about a 3 on the arousal scale. I would tell someone to really pay attention. I'm using numbers. I kind of like numbers.
Sure.
I don't actually like them that much. I don't want to calculate with them. But just for the sake of this, for sexual arousal, 0 being no, I'm at the grocery store, leave me alone, and 10 being, oh, it's too late. So I would say play with that. When do you get that place where you want to proceed forward and have an orgasm? So don't go there. Go to 3 or a 4 and then breathe through that. So what you're doing is almost like harvesting some of that energy. So you're breathing it up and through and around and into your body. You're breathing it into your heart and your throat and your brain. I want to say I believe in energy. It's scientifically proven. So it's just supercharged energy, that's been run through your genitals. So I would tell people to breathe that through. And then as your reward, then you can go back, re-stimulate, and go all the way, you know, go all the way with yourself or with your partner and have that climax after you have harvested some of that energy, because you'll have that energy in the cells of your body. You will be walking around with at least a little more of an ecstatic state than usual.
And now you've moved from this area, well, I shouldn't say now, over the last few years as well, you've gotten into mothers and daughters, and there's so much to cover. We can't get to all of it, but I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the teleclass that you're offering. Can you go through that a little bit?
Yes, I love my teleclass. It helps mothers get really clear on what they would like to pass on to their daughters, because I think that part of my life purpose is to pass on enlightened sexuality to the next generation. And one time I was listening to a podcast about sex, because I love listening to podcasts, and I especially love listening to podcasts about sex. And this one was about mindful parenting, and they were talking about sexuality, and they kept saying, pass on your values to your children, pass on your values to your children. And I found that really frustrating, because what they didn't say is that most of us don't even know what our values are or what we want to pass on to our children or how we can pass them on. How do you do that? Some moms are like, what do I even say? I don't want to tell my daughter too much because that might cause her to be overly enthusiastic about sex. But at the same time, I don't want to say nothing, and I don't want to pass on my own inhibitions and fears. So what do I do? So what my teleclass does is it's a three-part 1 hour, so it's a total of 3 hours. It's a three-part experience called Crossing That Bridge, and I help mothers access their own truth about sexuality so that they really know what they want to pass on to their daughters and how to say it.
Yeah, wow. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about conscious parenting and various things around parenting, but that's a great point. What do you say exactly, other than the technical stuff and answering how babies are made? And it feels personal. And I had Ron Lieber on here talking about money, and he was saying, you know, we're so weird about our inability to talk about money and tell our children, you know, how much do you owe on your mortgage? What do you earn?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we withhold these few subjects, and then we wonder how come people are in debt or they have challenges around their sexual life. So that sounds really fascinating.
It is. It's fascinating. I think this is my favorite topic. I think but it's fun and funny, but it really gives moms a time to be introspective and really go, what do I want to pass on to my daughter? And because my daughter is so open with me, I'm also able to share with the mothers in the teleclass what's actually going on there with sexuality in these young kids. Because I actually know.
Right.
I feel like I'm one of the few people my age who like really has a good picture of what's going on sexually with kids. So I'm calling this mothers and daughters because that's typically who I work with. I don't know why a parent of a boy couldn't do the Crossing That Bridge teleclass, but daughters are my territory.
Yeah. Well, I think the sons and fathers are a little more open with each other, you know, maybe in a superficial way, but there is at least some permission to talk
maybe
about it.
There is more permission to be sexual for boys than there is for girls.
And so if people want to find out more, if they're interested in learning more about you, tantric coachings, or, you know, either of these events, how do they find you?
I am at the website yougoddessyoga.com, you with a U as opposed to Y-O-U. That is pretty easy. yougoddessyoga.com. But people who Google Rachel Fisk Tantra Chicago will definitely be able to find me. There's lots of articles that I've written and ways of reaching me.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your knowledge. I learned a ton today. I'm sure everyone listening did as well.
Thanks, Laura. I hope so.
Absolutely.
It was a pleasure for me.
Thank you so much.